Okay, so thank you for listening to this long overdue episode. It's been a while, to say the least. I had kind of decided that however much I loved doing this podcast, I just couldn't make it happen. I just love it too much. So I'm going to really try to get it up and running again. And here's how it's going to go as I move forward. This episode will kind of tie everything together from the two episodes that I did back in 2021. And this little three-episode mini-series will kind of act as an introduction to this show. And then I'll begin working on a season's worth of episodes. 10 episodes? 12? Something like that? I'm not altogether sure. But it's happening. Okay, so there you go. In a nutshell, that's kind of what's going on. And with that, let's get this thing started. Hey, this is Josh Kaufman, and you're listening to The Pair. So if you listened to episode number one of this podcast, you may remember that I said that each episode or potentially a group of episodes would serve as the inspiration for a piece of music or some other artistic endeavor. Well, that's where we are now. I want to take a little time, though, to go back over the ground that was covered in those first two episodes, which dealt with the limits of language and thought. What are the takeaways? And then I want to introduce the song that I've written as a companion piece. You'll hear bits of that song throughout this episode, and the full version will be available really soon. So if you haven't listened yet to those first two episodes, The Limits of Language and Thought, parts one and two, do it. And then come back and meet me right here. And this will all make sense, maybe. All right, so in part one, I had the opportunity to speak with linguist Anne Bunger about Benjamin Lee Whorf and the theories of linguistic determinism and linguistic relativity that are associated with him. These theories are built upon the idea that language determines or strongly influences thought. The words, the phrases, the grammatical tools that are available to us determine what sorts of thoughts we're capable of having. It's an interesting and intriguing idea, but in the end, it just doesn't seem to be true. Language is a tool, but it doesn't shape our thought. Thought is prior to language, not vice versa. Heaven knows the way it goes. Now, the song that I wrote was one that I had mostly finished writing before doing either of these podcast episodes, and this discussion about Benjamin Lee Whorf actually forced me to change the title, which in this case was also the main repeated line of the chorus. And that chorus initially said, "We are bound by the language." The idea was that our thoughts are limited by what we're able to say, and that when we reach the limits of language, we are, in some sense, stuck. We can't go any further. It was a very Whorfian hook for a song. But after reading and studying and talking to Anne Bunger, I felt like I had to abandon that because, well, it seemed wrong. We aren't, in fact, bound by the language, as I had said. Thought, it seems, both utilizes and transcends language. So I had to find another angle, another way of getting at what I was trying to say. And that brings me to part two and one of my all-time favorite philosophers, Ludwig Wittgenstein. I began episode two with Wittgenstein's famous statement, "Whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent." Wittgenstein, it seems, believed that we are often guilty of what one might call linguistic overreach, attempting to use words in ways in which they simply cannot be used. And even when, in his later work, he came to espouse a broader view of the possibilities of language, it's still clear that he viewed language as limited in some way. He believed that we must always be aware of context and of the particular, quote, language game that we are playing. Either way, whether prescribing silence or awareness of context, Wittgenstein seems to suggest that we can only go so far with the things we say. Explanations come to an end somewhere. When we get lost in the language. So, I changed the hook of my song from "We are bound by the language" to "We get lost in the language." It's not that language limits thought, but rather that reality transcends both language and thought, and so language can get in the way. We mustn't attempt explanation where explanation is not available. So, I wanted to go into a bit more detail about this song, and I suppose doing so will also give some insight into my own motivations for exploring this topic in the first place. A little aside here first, I used to be kind of opposed to explaining songs because, well, to quote Wittgenstein again, explanations come to an end somewhere, and what better place for them to come to an end than in a piece of art, right? I kind of felt like the song should stand on its own and that explaining it would actually do a kind of disservice. But then I began to realize that I, myself, actually appreciate when I get an explanation of a song or any work of art. I find that it doesn't detract from the art. It doesn't take away depth. It gives depth. It actually contributes something to my experience. It gives it context, or it adds without defining. I find that art can still be transcendent, perhaps even more so alongside the explanation. An example that comes immediately to mind is The Ascent of Mount Carmel by St. John of the Cross. Each section of the book begins with a stanza from a poem that he wrote. And then that particular section of the book is devoted to explaining and expanding upon that particular stanza. And it works. The beauty and the meaning just take on more depth and nothing is lost. Anyway, I hope you'll feel the same way, that nothing is lost and that these brief musings and explanations contribute something to your experience of the song itself. So the inspirations for this song actually go back a long way. Back to when I was in school. I went to Anderson University for the first 3 years of college. And Anderson is a small Christian school in the middle of Indiana. And because it was a Christian university, there was a requirement to take a certain number of credits in Bible and religion. And in one of those classes, in the middle of a lecture, my professor said something that kind of struck me and has stuck with me ever since. He said, "Everything we know of God is like a tiny drop in the ocean of who God really is." And I remember thinking, well, why are we even bothering to try to talk about this then, right? I mean, it wasn't as if he was saying a drop is all we have right now and we just need to think and ponder and study more and we'll eventually figure it all out and get the rest of the drops. No, I think his point was clearly that that drop is it. That's all we're capable of. We'll never comprehend that ocean. It's too much. It's beyond us. And so again, the question that arose from me and one that I think naturally arises is, why are we talking about it? If all we can know about God is a tiny drop in a vast ocean of the actual entire truth about God, then why are there libraries filled with theology? I mean, what if all we knew or could ever know of mathematics was 1 + 1 = 2? And what if people wrote and wrote and wrote about this volume after volume on mathematics with no other mathematical facts discussed, just 1 + 1 = 2? Obviously, that would be ridiculous. And so I thought, isn't talk about God also ridiculous? Well, I think there's a sense in which the answer to that question is yes. If we want to talk about God in the same way that we talk about math or science, then yes, we're probably best off to just keep our mouths shut. If language is confined to objective, logical, scientific, provable statements, then when it comes to God, well, quote, whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent, to again refer back to Wittgenstein. But I also think that there is another important sense in which the answer to the question of whether God talk is ridiculous is definitely no. In order for that to be true, though, we have to think more like the later Wittgenstein and be willing to acknowledge different, quote, language games. We have to recognize and allow that talking about God is not the same as talking about calculus or astronomy. We have to understand and accept that when we speak about something so transcendent, the words serve only to scratch the surface, to hint at, to point toward. And there are probably times when we can do no better than to simply be silent and let the truth reside in the depth of that silence, whatever that means. It certainly isn't math. And the moment we try to make it like math, well, we get lost in the language.